Good morning. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. Communities across New Mexico are stepping up to help migrants seeking asylum in the U.S. What kinds of assistance and services do these folks need the most, and how can you get involved if you want to help out? Today, we're talking to the folks who are organizing volunteers and providing food, shelter, clothing, and medical care to asylum seekers who are being released here by the federal government. We'd like to hear from you. You can email letstalk@kunm.org. You can tweet us using the hashtag letstalknm, or you can call us now. The number is 277-5867. That's 277-5866. First, we're going to start out this morning with Felipe Rodriguez of the New Mexico Dream Team. We're also joined by phone by Tim Keller, Mayor of Albuquerque. Good morning, Mayor Keller.
Good morning. Great to be here.
Great. Thanks so much for joining us. So the Albuquerque City Council just passed a measure this week to spend $250,000 to help support relief efforts for migrants. How did this measure come about?
Well, basically, for the past several months, folks in our city from every faith and background have been coming together to basically fill in this gap in the system as these asylum seekers who are, of course, they're legally in the country. They often are even have a leg band or something like that to track them, but they are just dumped off at a bus station. And luckily, there are nonprofits like Catholic Charities and Lutheran Family Services and even Nob Hill Indivisible who have been coordinating with all sorts of faith communities and nonprofits to essentially shepherd them to a sponsor. So most of them have a sponsor that they're set up with that will help them in some city in America, and it's always different, and we have to get them to their sponsor, or else they're just stuck in our city. And so we usually house them for a couple of days and also get them any urgent medical care they need, and that's been done through UNM and a lot of volunteer doctors from around the city. And then they go on their way to the next stop in their long, long journey.
So, hey, Felipe, with the NM Dream Team, you were involved in helping get this measure passed by the city council. What kind of work did you have to do to get that kind of financial assistance from the city to help the efforts that these non-governmental organizations are doing to support folks?
Yeah. The New Mexico Dream Team co-drafted this resolution with Councillor Pat Davis. We've been involved in the process with all of the organizations that are part of the coalition since February. Around February, and you know, we've been receiving around 300 people every week. It varies every week, but the coalition has been receiving since February. I think we've received more than 2,000 people. And so after we saw that in Las Cruces, which is also one of the cities that it's receiving asylum seekers, there was an appropriation of money to help support these efforts and to make them sustainable. We thought that it'll be appropriate and it'll be necessary to do it here in Albuquerque too. We co-drafted the resolution, introduced it, and then with the support of all of the groups in the coalition, we were able to advocate for it to pass. One of the things that we did is that we invited all the councilors to be part of the sites and to see what was happening, to see the faces of the people that we were helping.
Did all the city councilors go? Did they take you up on your invite?
Most of them went. I think all of the ones that voted yes went.
Got it. I think it was a party line vote. I think most of the Democrats voted yes and the Republicans voted no on this measure, yeah?
Yes, there were 6 votes and 3 against.
Mm-hmm.
With the support of the coalition, we made a big push for it to pass. I will say 2 things about it. I'm really proud of our city council for supporting our Albuquerque community as we engage in this humanitarian effort to get these asylum seekers to their sponsors. We decided to do this regardless of what was going to happen. We knew that it was necessary. We knew that these people needed help, and we set up this process. So the decision was already made. We were going to, this is the way that Albuquerque is. We're a city that welcomes immigrants. And we just asked the city council to support on making this effort sustainable. That was the resolution. It was our advocacy community asking for support. And the city council did the right thing by listening to its community and supporting us.
So folks who are tuning in this morning, we have posted some links to the various organizations who are coordinating volunteers, taking donations of cash and also of supplies. You can go to KUNM.org to see a list of those organizations. If you're part of an organization that is raising money or coordinating volunteer efforts and you don't see your organization listed on our website, give us a call right now and tell us about the work that you're doing. 277-5866 is the number to call. 277-5866. We're going to hear in a few minutes from Jim Gannon of Catholic Charities about their efforts as well. I want to come back to Mayor Keller. There were some folks who spoke at the city council meeting, Mayor Keller, about some concerns for New Mexico residents who don't have enough to eat or who are living on the street or who are not receiving medical care. And this is kind of a common refrain in these kinds of circumstances where folks say, hey, what about the people who are already here in New Mexico, who are already experiencing homelessness, hunger, untreated medical conditions? What do you say to folks who have those concerns about how the city is allocating money to help the folks who are moving through the state kind of in a temporary basis on their way to meet up with host families while they wait for their asylum cases to be decided?
Sure. I mean, I think that's really something where at first blush, you know, I understand folks' point there, but it's very, very apples and oranges. We're talking about $250,000 for a population that we actually can move along and that will not remain and essentially cost us more, whether it's an emergency room or homeless services. So it's almost like preventative in that sense. And I think it's important to put it in comparison, too. This is $250,000 versus upwards of $10 million that we spend on homelessness, and including I've doubled down on that. We're actually looking at tripling our homeless voucher money, and we're looking at building a $15 million homeless shelter. So, I mean, this is literally, you know, less than one-tenth of a percent of a comparison. So I think I know we are doing more for our homeless community than we have in the last 10 years, and that's just a financial reality. The other thing is I think it's also important to understand that to paint people in need as all kind of the same is also a real injustice to both of these groups of people. Our homeless folks often live here, have family here. They're dealing with major issues around addiction, mental illness, and they need a job here and a home here. That is a very different situation individually than someone who has literally been walking or jammed in the back of a truck for 6 months coming from horrible things in another country. So, I would just also ask people to remember, like, these both sets of these folks are humans, and their stories and their needs are extremely different.
So with this $250,000 that the city council has appropriated for services and relief support, how will this money be distributed? Who's going to get this money, and who's going to decide who gets this money?
Sure. Well, when I came into office, I created a Office of Equity and Inclusion, and inside that office is the Office of Refugee and Immigrant Affairs. And we created those with the intention of helping refugees that were coming through here on a regular basis that have been for the last 40 years or so, and also helping our immigrant population. What's happened is that office now almost exclusively deals with asylum seekers because the demand and the issues are so challenging. And the challenge is that our city, actually, I am so proud of our city because our city has so many people who want to help and so many organizations that want to help that the challenge is actually organizing all of the logistics and organizing the type of donations that we need, sending them to the right charity that's helping out with them. It's also connecting, making sure that medical team is there, making sure we're getting the transport because we have to move these people from wherever they're dropped off to where they're staying and then back. So the point is that money is going to be going towards funding the same nonprofits that are coordinating now, but they're going to be able to have some extra coordinating positions. And that logistical challenge is actually much harder than I think people realize. When you get 100 people dropped off at a location, and you've got to feed, clothe, treat them medically, and then find transportation for them heading out, and six of them speak Portuguese only, it's very, very tough, actually. And this is what happened. Even my wife went down and helped in one of these situations over Easter weekend. So we desperately need paid, consistent managers to coordinate all of the volunteers. And that's what this funding will go towards.
So how far is this $250,000 going to go? Like, when we're thinking about the efforts, and we're going to hear a little bit more, like I said, from these organizations who are doing this work on the ground. But in your mind, how big of an impact is this $250,000 going to make on the efforts in Albuquerque? How long will it last?
Well, we hope and believe that it should last us through the calendar year. So again, think of this as a team of folks who are going to be able to focus on this for the remainder, and through December. We think this will help us, again, as long as the nonprofits continue to bring to bear all the wonderful things that they are. We think this will get us through till December, and then we're going to have to, you know, look and see where we're at. And that's also why the other component of this is the facility at Expo New Mexico, which the governor has wonderfully opened for this process. It depends on the demand and the supply. So if the federal government continues to increase the number of asylum seekers they drop off here on about an hour's advance notice, we might need more help. But if that number goes down, you know, then we might not need all the funding.
Why do you think it's so important for the city of Albuquerque to provide financial assistance to these groups?
Well, I think there's probably three reasons. One is that this is an investment for our community that prevents things from getting a lot worse, because we're not the final destination. We're just passing these folks through. And if we can do that smoothly and help them on their way, it prevents any additional resources that we'd have to spend if they stayed longer. The second thing is, I do believe it's the right thing to do. And our city, I believe, has always stepped up whenever we can in whatever way makes sense for us, and to help those in need. And I think in this situation, this is one where people can really make a difference. I mean, volunteering for 3 hours to provide translation services is something like a lot of us can do. And so this also has been a way to bring our community together and say, look, we have a lot of challenges. We're dealing with a lot in our city. But here's a way you can actually help, literally help someone's life for a day and a half that they will never forget. That's a great thing. And I think that's something our city's always stood for. And I think the last reason is because, you know, cities, we are in the center of New Mexico, like literally. So in 1,000 square miles, we are going to get asylum seekers no matter what, because we're within 8 hours of the border. And so we're going to get these folks whether we want it or not. The question is how we're going to treat them, how we're going to deal with it. And so I think we're being very proactive. We're doing this in the right way, and it makes me proud of our city.
Mayor Keller, thanks so much for joining us this morning. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. We're talking with the folks who are helping organize and provide assistance to migrants who are seeking asylum in the U.S., who are being dropped off in New Mexico by the federal government. What kinds of support and assistance do they need the most, and how can you get involved? What do you think about Albuquerque's decision to spend $250,000 towards this relief effort? Do you support providing housing for migrants at Expo New Mexico, as the state has decided to do? Give us a call right now. The number is 277-5866. That's 277-5866. You can also email letstalk@kunm.org. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting KUNM. Representing Native American tribes, people facing criminal charges, civil rights plaintiffs, and victims of sexual abuse. Info at rothsteinlaw.com.
Program support provided by St. John's College, where students learn directly from great books by Plato, Einstein, and Shakespeare. Offering a pre-college summer program for intellectually curious high school students. More at sjc.edu/academy.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, how the death of a young woman on a university campus fueled a movement to combat the crime of femicide in Mexico.
If they kill me, it'll be because I walk alone at night. If they kill me, they'll say it was because I was flirtatious and I said no.
That's next time on Latino USA.
That's Latino USA, Monday mornings at 8 a.m. on KUNM.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. I'm Elaine Baumgartel, and we're talking about the needs of folks who are seeking asylum in the U.S. and who are being dropped off by federal agencies here in New Mexico, often with just the clothes they're wearing. Let's go to the phones right now. Let's take a call from Chris in Albuquerque. Good morning, Chris. You're on the air.
Good morning.
What would you like to add this morning, Chris?
Well, I believe that we're only doing the right thing, and we don't really have a choice because we're on the front line here. And as Mayor Keller said, everybody is going to come here anyway. We're right in the path. So I think we start them off on a positive note that's only going to help the whole country in the long run. And I think the amount of money is roughly $1 out of 4,000. Which is, you know, is almost nothing for the budget. And I think that's a very small price to pay just to make your country more secure and to invest in the future. And I'm proud that we're doing it. And I have absolutely no other thought of what to do. I mean, this is the only thing that we can do. I believe it's just the right direction.
Great. Thank you, sir, for your call this morning. Let's go to Margaret in Albuquerque. Good morning, Margaret. You're on the air. What would you like to add this morning?
Hello?
Hello, Margaret, you're on the air.
Hi. I just want to say that I commend Albuquerque for its generosity.
Margaret, let me do something. Let me put you on hold again and have my call screener see if we can get your signal cleared up a little bit. It was kind of coming in and out, and I want to be able to hear what you're having to say. Let's go to Felipe Rodriguez with the NM Dream Team. We've also got Jim Gannon in the studio. Jim Gannon is with Catholic Charities here in New Mexico, two of the organizations that are doing this coordination of volunteers, collecting of donations, both the financial donations and the supplies, food, clothing, etc. Felipe, when you're thinking about this organizational challenge that the mayor mentioned, when you have hundreds of people coming into the community who have all kinds of needs, what kind of things do people need when they arrive, when they get off this bus in Albuquerque? What kind of state are they in, and what do they need right away?
Yeah, well, usually asylum seekers that are released under parole, which is the people that are coming, like Mayor Keller said, they have to get to their sponsor, and they're being dropped off in Albuquerque. And they're kind of being told, good luck getting to your sponsor. And literally they get dropped off with just the clothes that they're wearing, nothing else. So our job has been stepping up at that point and providing, you know, immediate needs, food, medical assistance, shelter, and then providing a call or a phone so they can call the sponsor. We coordinate with them so that their sponsor can book a flight ticket or a bus ticket, and then we give them a ride to the airport and they get wherever they have to go.
So for folks who aren't familiar with this process of requesting asylum, these are folks who have gone through a process with the federal government and are now legally in the country, right?
Yep.
And so the sponsor that they're staying with, are their either family members or friends or organizations who've organized for them to stay? How long does it take for an asylum case to go to court?
I will say years. There's a backlog of cases, and it's a really lengthy process of interviews and court dates and them trying to prove that they're actually coming from a terrible thing, which most of them are. But yeah, coming back to the necessities, I will say that, you know, each bus that gets dropped off here, Jim and I were talking about how all of them are really, really different. You know, most of them are families, but the demographics change. Jim was sharing a story of one bus that we received where it was a lot of really young children, babies, and we start asking for like a lot of baby clothing, But then the next box that I was received, it was like teenager. So like the baby clothing was not useful anymore.
Yeah, not big enough.
Yeah.
Jim, tell us a little bit about the folks that you have been working with Catholic Charities. The diversity of folks who are coming into Albuquerque and the diversity of medical and immediate needs that they have.
Well, I think it's really very simple on the immediate needs. It's very basic. They need food. In some cases, they've been behind fences in sleeping outside with just space blankets when they've been in custody with the Border Patrol. And then when released, we've had cases where they haven't eaten for 4 days. So they're wearing the same clothes that they came across the border on, perhaps from when they left their homes. Any of their possessions have been tossed away in detainment, any medications. So then the second issue is really getting a hot shower, change of clothing, again, through, you know, folks donating good secondhand clothes. And, you know, we need smaller sizes for the most part. Folks are a little bit run smaller than the U.S. typical adult and child. So that helps out a lot, but it does change with every bus. We had one bus all geared up. And this is the other point that sometimes is lost. You know, we focus on the Central American countries, on Guatemala and Honduras, and saying, you know, this is where the folks are all coming from, Central America. But the bus was literally two-thirds of the bus was Portuguese-speaking Brazilians. It is not. And some folks are saying there's been up to, you know, 60 different nationalities identified in northern New Mexico. Northern Mexico. And we have kind of closed off refugee resettlement. It went from over 100,000 to, you know, last year 18,000 with a quota of 30,000. This is becoming the only way to come into the United States to get asylum. The former method through the refugee system is pretty non-existent now. So
wait, so are you saying that part of the reason why there are so many people seeking asylum is literally because of a federal change in refugee acceptance?
Across the line it is. Huh. And what is putting as a legitimate way of doing it?
There's this assumption that there's just more people trying to come into the U.S., but it sounds like you're saying it's a change in the way that people are being, there's less of an opportunity as a refugee, and so asylum is the only option?
Certainly the Central American, we're seeing an upbeat in response.
That's why I'm...
Yeah, but on the whole, other folks are now also seeing this as an opportunity. To come in. Some who can make their way into Canada can try, but because Canada is a country where we consider a safe haven under the asylum laws, you would have to make asylum into Canada. And Canada would certainly handle those folks. And Canada has been handling their responsibilities to refugees and to migrants much different than we have. To be able to come in as a pass-through country, Mexico is considered one of those countries you could pass through on your way to the United States, and you don't have to seek asylum in Mexico. So that's why it's the collecting point for many, many of these folks. Part of it is certainly, what are the changes we are doing? This has been going on for years and years. Annunciation House, which has been kind of the coordinator down in El Paso, who lets us know when the buses are coming with that 1 hour, 2 hour notice of when they might get here. Actually, you know, this in the morning we'll receive somewhere around 10, 11 o'clock. Folks are arriving in the afternoon. So we have this very short time. And they're coming up because this is the way to get in. And everyone's looking, and, you know, when we get down to it, these are just families who want to be safe. And when you sit and hear these stories, regardless of political identity, religious beliefs, non-religious beliefs, whoever you are, you can understand. It's no different than my grandparents who picked up and left Ireland because of the persecution, the poverty, and wanting a better life for their children. And coming to the United States, you know, they weren't really invited to come to the United States. They didn't go through a visa process. They didn't apply when they were in Ireland. They just showed up at Ellis Island and got through. And much to the same is what's going on the border. Folks are presenting their stories or getting through. Now, the documentation and things they bring with them get tossed in a garbage can and they don't have it further along. And as the mayor said, the alternative is a bus showing up in downtown Albuquerque and just dropping folks off that don't speak English, may not even speak Spanish. They may indigenous languages from Central America or from some of the other nations that are now participating in this. And our police, our paramedics, and our hospitals, and in a day, $250,000 would be spent just serving those folks and tying up emergency assets. We prevent that all for very basic care.
Folks, we're talking about the services and relief efforts for migrants who are seeking asylum in the U.S. and who are being dropped off in New Mexico by federal agencies. Should or have you donated money or supplies to help migrants and asylum seekers in New Mexico? Why do you think helping out is important right now? Give us a call. The number is 277-5866. That's 277-5866. And let's take a call now from Margaret in Albuquerque. I think we got you back, Margaret.
Hi, thanks for taking the call.
Absolutely.
I really appreciate it. I'm calling as a volunteer who has been working with several of the agencies you're talking about to help people move through Albuquerque to their sponsors in other parts of the United States. And I'm wanting to commend Albuquerque for its generosity and the volunteers of Albuquerque for their generosity and the nonprofit associations for their efficiency in making this process happen. It's incredible to watch how efficient everything is happening. But I also want to point out the inefficiency of the federal government in their responsibility to deal with this issue, because this is a city government stepping up to take over where a federal government should be more efficiently handling this situation. The federal government has recently trying to appropriate $40 million to build another detention center down at the border to house people, which is a crazy waste of money because these people have sponsors, as you've mentioned over and over in the United States. There's no reason for them to be housed. That's just a way for private companies to make profit on a detention center, holding people that don't need to be held, who can be easily moved along to their sponsors for individual families to help individual people. That $40 million could be spread amongst these nonprofit organizations who are already really efficiently moving those people along as they should be moved along. It's just an example. That's the large example. The small example of the inefficiencies from the federal government side is that when they're moving from the border and being put on buses that are arriving in Albuquerque, crazy things are happening, like their belts and shoelaces are being taken away because it's protocol in the prison system to do that with people. But that makes no sense in this situation. There are many things from the federal side that are being made much more difficult than they need to be made, and we on the local side are stepping up to rectify all of those things and help people.
Hey, Margaret, what kind of volunteer work do you do?
I have been doing travel arrangements for people, so arranging anything from bus tickets to train tickets to plane tickets, whatever the sponsors will pay for people to move along. And then also right now I'm actually standing outside a doctor's office with another to assist. So I've volunteered in two ways. The short term is helping people move through to their sponsors in other parts of the country. The other part is long term. I'm in the second year of volunteering with asylum seekers who have ended up in Albuquerque, not coming through the system we're talking about, a slightly different way, because they didn't have a sponsor. And I'm a French speaker, so I was tapped to do interpretation for West African refugees. And I'm standing outside a doctor's office to accompany someone to a medical appointment right now. I've been working with that person for 2 years. My guess is this will be the last doctor's appointment I accompany them with, because over the past year they've learned English and Spanish.
Oh, wow. Hey, thanks, Margaret, for your call. We appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you.
Let's take a call now from David in Albuquerque. Good morning, David. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to encourage people to learn more about it and volunteer if possible. I had the privilege of volunteering a few times and getting to know kind of some of these families and sort of more about why they're coming and learning about the process itself and the fact that, you know, this is a legal process, you know, not just under U.S. law, but under international law, which we've agreed to. And for folks, for example, who say that this is some illegal process, that we that are really worry about the rule of law and talk about the rule of law and talk about legality, that in fact that's what these folks are doing. They're doing it legally. And as the previous caller said, they're getting very, very little support from our national government, which is really embarrassing and derelict, because, you know, when cities and states have to step up, this is a crisis that our federal government could resolve pretty quickly in terms of providing aid. We do it for, we have whole agencies dedicated to this, FEMA and others, who could provide aid. And we do this in other countries. If there was a decision to do this, then you wouldn't have to have a lot of people sort of just stepping up. And just a quick story, you know, one of the things people don't realize is that they take away their belts and their shoelaces. This is the kind of treatment, and besides being detained, and these are families. These aren't in many cases people who are grown men and women. They're parents, but there's a lot of kids, and all of them get their belts taken, their shoelaces taken. They're detained in pretty much prison-like situations. Most of them are very, very hungry and just exhausted, right? And then you talk to them about their stories and why they're here, and they're just really trying to escape some pretty bad situations. I had the ability to talk to a few of them, and they just, you know, their stories are heartbreaking. And the last thing I'll say is most people don't realize, sadly, even under current law, most of them are not going to be able to stay, despite some pretty good evidence that the situation they're in Guatemala, Honduras, other countries, is pretty untenable, and any of us with our children and families would not like to be able to stay. We would have to go. I mean, we would have to move to keep our families safe. And yet, I think certainly under this administration, most of them are going to be sent back, and it's only a matter of time. And that's the sad part. So unless we change the law, unless we really step up, this situation isn't going to get any better, and it's going to mean that more cities and states are going to have to pick up the slack. And I too just want to say how proud I am of our state and city for stepping up.
Great, David. Thanks for your call. Let's take one more call now. Joanne in Albuquerque. Good morning, Joanne. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I've been a volunteer just about three times. First, I started making a donation, and that was through Indivisible Knob Hill. They collected, at least half a U-Haul little trailer full of stuff, like within 3 days of putting the call out. And that points to one of the important roles that new volunteers and people can play, and that's connecting with the groups that are actually sorting and delivering all these different clothing items to the different places where the asylum seekers may be. I also have been able to connect up with two faith denominations. I'm not a member of one of the major denominations here. And so I went to a Lutheran Family Services setting, and actually there were few kids and families there, but I helped by simply bringing some very simple paper crafting activities, and three or four young, beautiful children, they drew, and they made a little necklace, and they did a little puzzle, and they had a nice time together for about an hour. I also connected up with the Jewish congregations. There's like three or four Jewish congregations that are hosting asylum seekers. And at this point, say late April or so, they were very, very organized. They really, really knew what had to happen. And I served on the hospitality team for the day when some volunteers were needed because a bus had arrived. And that was simply helping people get to their assigned hotel rooms and show them some of the fixtures in the hotel rooms. And I want to point out, I do not speak Spanish, but I find a way, and I'm encouraged, of course, by these hosting groups to do what I can. And I really want to say that it's very important for people to feel like you may really find something that's very, very good for your heart to do in this situation over the next few months. And I'm really glad the city's involved, because if you are not connected to a group already, perhaps someone at the city will be able to help you find these groups more easily, and that you won't be spending a lot of time kind of tracking down, well, where can I go?
Got it. Great. Joanne, thanks. We have to take a quick break, so that's why I'm jumping away from your call right now. Thanks so much for sharing your experience with us. We have posted some links on our website, KUNM.org, with information about how to get involved, both volunteering your time, donating money, and or donating items themselves, in-kind items or clothing or food, etc. A bunch of links on our website for you to figure out if you want to get involved, what might be the way that works best for you. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Elaine Baumgartel, and we're going to continue our conversation in just a moment. We'll be joined by Santa Fe Mayor Alan Weber. He's on the line right now, so we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. This is KUNM.
It's difficult to see how you would reverse the situation or ameliorate the situation or in some way change U.S. relations all across Latin America to where people in Latin America looked at us more as a beneficial partner.
This edition of AR features Lawrence Wilkerson on U.S. Empire and Latin America.
That's Alternative Radio, Saturday night at 6 on KUNM.
Skip the hassle of finding a buyer for that unwanted car. Donate it to KUNM and turn it into great radio. Or maybe you've got a truck, boat, or an RV you don't want anymore. Donate it to KUNM. It's very easy. It qualifies you for KUNM membership, and it helps KUNM a lot. Call today, 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Elaine Baumgartel, and we're joined now by phone by Santa Fe Mayor Alan Weber. Good morning, Mayor.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm doing just fine, thanks. Thanks so much for joining us. Just recently, Santa Fe decided not to contribute money in the same way that Albuquerque did or to house migrants. Talk to us a little bit about how that decision came about and what the reasoning was.
Yeah, that's not entirely accurate, but let's go back through what is the story. So about, I don't know, 2.5-3 weeks ago now, in advance of anything coming our way from either Albuquerque or Las Cruces, just from reading the papers and from seeing the signals that President Trump was going to use whatever he could do to fabricate a crisis and try to punish sanctuary cities, we convened a group of people here in Santa Fe to talk about what we could do to be of help. And immediately after that meeting, where people said they'd be very committed to stepping up and adding support to anything that came our way, I got a call from the mayor of Las Cruces, which then prompted me to call Tim Keller in Albuquerque and the mayor and the governor's office and start conversations about what we could do to be supportive. Our initial instinct was that with refugees and asylum seekers arriving in Las Cruces and then making their way up to Albuquerque, that Santa Fe could also pitch in, stand up a welcoming center with beds and food and showers and clothes and health care if needed. But when we talked to the people in Las Cruces and in Albuquerque, it seemed clear that the best thing that we could do to help the people who were trying to make their way to other cities, ultimately to Denver or Salt Lake City or to cities in Florida or elsewhere where their families and sponsors were, the best thing we could do was not to stand up our own shelter because we don't have a Greyhound bus originating in Santa Fe. Our airport, while able to handle incoming flights, is tiny by comparison to Albuquerque or El Paso. So our conclusion, and in working with some of the people you've had on the program already and some folks who you'll be speaking with later, was that Santa Fe's best contribution would be to make money available to support the needs of Albuquerque and of Las Cruces, and to wait to hear from them what we can do to be most helpful to the asylum seekers. If you just think about the logistics and from a human point of view, you've got people who've been making their way toward the United States for days and weeks, maybe even months. They make it across the border. They get here. and then to send them by bus from Las Cruces up to Santa Fe, have them spend a night or two here, and then send them by bus back to Albuquerque to spend a night or two before they can catch a Greyhound or other bus or an airplane out of state, seemed like a really bad logistical way to be helpful.
Sure. That makes sense. So talk to me a little bit about how you're going to organize either fundraising efforts or other kinds of services and support from Santa Fe.
Well, we have set up a fund with the help of the Santa Fe Community Foundation.
We put a link to that on our website for folks. So we put a link to the Santa Fe Community Foundation on our website. So folks, you can find that at KUNM.org if you're in Santa Fe.
Or anywhere else for that matter.
I mean, that's true. That's true.
So we would welcome contributions. I think we are going to collect whatever our community wants to put toward helping refugees and asylum seekers. We heard from Mayor Keller and the good folks in Albuquerque that as the Expo Center gets stood up, that there's a place for Santa Fe to make a very specific contribution with a children's corner. And in fact, the New Mexican had an editorial this morning asking people to reach into their pockets, go to that website, make a contribution. I think it's about a $6,000 cost to contribute toys, books, things that will give young children comfort and something to do while they're waiting in the Expo Center for their next stage of their journey. So we're taking our cues from the people on the ground working with the asylum seekers. The first step will be money to help that children's corner get adequately built out and with things that will make it much more pleasant and welcoming for young kids to be in that transitional space. And we'll go from there. There may be other requests, whether it's for money to underwrite bus tickets or trips or even buses themselves. We're going to make our community know that there are ways to contribute short of standing up a facility up here that really would take the immigrants, the refugees, out of their way to get up here. The other thing that we're making clear in Santa Fe, and I think it's something that New Mexicans across the state should be aware of, is the fact that we've got newcomers making their way into the state absolutely should not distract us from the fact that we have immigrants living in Santa Fe making contributions to our community, and they are being harassed and in many cases rounded up by ICE. So don't lose track of the people who live here now. Don't forget that we are a sanctuary city in Santa Fe. We want to welcome people here who want to settle, make a contribution, work in our businesses. We've seen ICE raids in hotels and restaurants, and this is going on constantly, even while this other fabricated problem, courtesy of the Trump administration, is asking us to take care of asylum seekers who are coming through New Mexico, in most cases not staying here. But let's not lose track of our residents who need help, too.
Great. Mayor Alan Weber of Santa Fe, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thanks for having me on, and thanks for raising the issue. It's really something we need to be talking about. I think the message to people in New Mexico and to the country is New Mexico has got this problem under control. We've got the community strength to take care of it, and our values are shining through, and we should all be very proud of that.
Mayor Alan Weber of Santa Fe, thank you very much.
Take care. Bye.
Let's take a call now from Gary in Albuquerque of Indivisible Knob Hill. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So how can folks get involved with the efforts that you're coordinating?
So Indivisible Knob Hill, we're a political nonprofit. Our mission is to not only educate the greater public, but try to effectuate political change where we can. The best way that we found for our organization to be involved is we're managing the volunteer list for all five organizations that are currently helping receive asylum seekers. So if you go to indivisiblenobhill.com, you can find a link to both a medical volunteer sign-up list as well as to a general volunteer sign-up list. And we're doing our best to kind of fill holes where they arise. You know, one of the issues I think that was raised earlier is that sometimes, you know, we'll get a busload that will have, you know, maybe 15 Portuguese speakers. And that's, you know, where a unique need comes in. And so that's where we try to reach out and identify those people that have those unique talents that, that can be utilized.
Great. Gary, stay on the line with me for a couple more minutes. Felipe, with the NM Dream Team, what kinds of volunteers or services or items are you most in need of right now?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely volunteers that are bilingual. Portuguese and Spanish are, Spanish is the most common language that we're getting. Volunteers, nurse practitioners or medical volunteers, I really need it. We were talking about the inhumane conditions that our federal government is, you know, treating asylum seekers with. Most asylum seekers are stuck in a detention center in jails. Where they're facing inhumane conditions. There's no oversight in these detention centers. They're privately owned, and they're here in New Mexico. And a lot of them come with malnutrition or colds because they were out in the cold. There's people that have died in these detention centers. That's how bad it is. So medical assistance is really needed. But most of the time, it's just like malnutrition and colds, minor stuff like that that people are coming with. I don't know, Jim, if you will.
Jim Gannon of Catholic Charities, what are you seeing in your organizational work? What is most needed? Volunteers? Maybe you could talk a little bit about the medical services and kind of how that triage system works when folks arrive in Albuquerque.
Well, certainly. Yeah, medical professionals who are bilingual in Spanish, some, if you know Portuguese, it always comes in handy, and that varies as far as the buses, and then less or so some other languages. Really, the triage comes in when folks arrive. The first thing we want to do is get some comfort. So we know everyone comes hungry. That's a commonality in, pretty much on every bus. So we're set up, get them down, get a meal. We start bringing them into, you know, intake or the situation of really connecting them with their sponsor and working with the sponsor to get them. The sponsor is actually paying for the travel from Albuquerque to the location. So we help go-betweens with that and make those arrangements that then make it either the bus or the air station or airport on time. So the next thing is certainly as folks are arriving, a little bit of triage is done by the medical staff, taking folks they look at and see its obvious symptoms of need to be met immediately. The other night, we had a young woman who'd been in detention actually for about 2 weeks, and she has glaucoma and came with medication. It was just tossed out after being apprehended, after she surrendered, I guess would be a better way to put it. And she didn't have any. So in order with glaucoma and the effects on the eyes, you know, our basic thing is, yeah, she has it, but we don't know whether she can fly or not, whether, you know, is it safe? Is she going to lose her eyesight if we just don't get that treated? So I got the privilege. I don't speak any Spanish or Portuguese, but I drove them down and using hand signals and other things and turning it over to the UNM bilingual staff. Got to see an ophthalmologist who then prescribed some medications, which then again we used our donations for to buy some medication for her. She's okay to travel by a unique situation. She's going to the East Coast. And on the East Coast, the doctor who treated her here actually has a colleague that she personally knows, an ophthalmologist at the ending city. So they've already coordinated aftercare. So that's the type of situation we're doing, and that prevents a bigger tragedy. But 90% of the cases, it's dealing with scrapes, bumps, minor infections that have resulted from cuts and things along the way that they need to get treated. And beyond that, you know, the hot shower is probably the most popular thing that they get on the first few hours of being here at the shelters. And then after that, having a pillow and a semi-soft place to lay their head, you know, in the hotels, it's definitely on beds. In our settings, we use church properties. In some cases, we have to use some cots and everything, but they still pillows and blankets, and they get a good night's sleep and refresh. And you see an amazing change in almost in the first 12 hours. You know, the next morning, kids are running around and everything else, and it's just an amazing thing. And I would like to add, it's not, we're not Catholic Charities doing it by our own. You know, at the same time, Tuesday night when I was up at the shelter, we were using one of the sisters' nuns was volunteering, and she was going around. She came up to me and she says, "You know, Jim, you're Catholic Charities and everything, but I haven't met another Catholic besides you and me." And that's true. The volunteers are assigned. It's not by faith. It's not, you don't have to worry. No one is trying. It's amazingly a pool of the entire community, faith-based and beyond, coming out and just showing, respecting the dignity that these folks bring with them. And it's amazing, and to see what Albuquerque is doing, and New Mexico as a whole. I would also add, you know, in the early days when we started in February, a little bit before the city and everything, Santa Fe folks were supporting us, faith communities from others. We helped support and underwrite some of the hotels that other organizations are using right now because we have some of the resources. So, you know, that $250,000 is being leveraged by both in-state and out-of-state donations. In our case, we were able to hire two coordinators to work our sites, which is unique among the groups. But we were able to do that because Catholic organizations from around the country put up money for that. So we specifically...
Let's take one more call real quick. Carla in Albuquerque, we just have a real quick second, but tell us about the work that you're doing as a site director for Albuquerque Interfaith.
So I am a co-site director with Eleanor Milroy, and we will be welcoming our 16th bus on Friday. We are completely volunteer-driven, and like Mr. Gannon talked about, people from all over the city with affiliations, and affiliations, what a lot of people say at our meetings is, "I'm a concerned human being, and that's why I'm here." So I would like to bring a story that pretty much highlights what we're doing.
We, unfortunately, you know what, Carla, we're just out of time. We just don't have enough time. But let me encourage you to share your story on our Facebook page, KUNM Radio, or on our website, KUNM.org. I'm delighted that you had a moment to call in. I'm just sorry that we are just literally out of time this morning. This is Let's Talk New Mexico. You can find links to all of these organizations on our website, KUNM.org. The volunteer coordination efforts and donation efforts, lots of ways for you to find out if you want to get involved, how you want to get involved, and with whom. Thanks a lot to Felipe Rodriguez of the NM Dream Team, Jim Gannon of Catholic Charities. We also heard this morning from Alan Weber, Santa Fe Mayor, and Tim Keller, Albuquerque Mayor. Also Gary of Indivisible Knob Hill, and then we just heard from Carla of Albuquerque Interfaith. Thanks so much, everybody who called in and shared your experiences volunteering. The conversation doesn't have to end here. Again, our Facebook page is KUNM Radio. You can also go to KUNM.org. Thanks to Marino Spencer for engineering the show this morning. Kaveh Movahed screamed your calls. Celia Rainey live tweeted the show, and May Ortega assisted with production this morning. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM.